Well, today I went to the University of Idaho and attended a Ron Paul rally and at the Student Union, and it was packed. People were lined up outside, I barely got in. I got to stand in the hall most of the time and record this, so I missed the beginning of it, but I got most of it, and it's just good to let you know what's going on with Ron Paul without a filter in the way of the media. Let him speak his mind. Most of what he said is pretty straightforward. I want to make a few comments on the typical objections I hear from Republicans or from conservatives I know about Ron Paul. They seem to like Ron Paul, but except for some problems, it's like people will vote for a candidate like, you know, the ones we have competing with them. I can't think of their names because they're all socialists. You listen to them; they're all the same. They just want the office. They have no record of obeying the Constitution or of any standing. You know, Ron Paul has so much way over all these guys, and yet everybody wants to find something wrong with Ron. It's like a reason they can't. They think he's a nut because he's a principled man and he's consistent. The two main objections I heard actually at a before the rally, I went and attended the Disputatio at New St. Andrews, and the speaker, I don't know his name, but he was talking about Ron Paul briefly and had a few problems, and his problems were the two I normally hear, which is his foreign policy and his religious stance. And the foreign policy one's the easiest one first. Ron Paul is a strict Monroe Doctrine type of guy. He's sick and tired of the U.S. Getting involved in every other country and trying to dictate what they do, and if they don't do it, you know, we'll do sanctions or war or covert operations or whatever we deem is necessary. And this has led to the problems we're in. And his point is, you know, the government should have as little to do with each other as possible, and the people should have as much to do with each other as possible. And that's been expressed by conservatives from the 60s, most of which have been purged these days. You never hear it on the media, but the old Monroe Doctrine. And I think that's a safe thing. We've been conditioned to think that other superpowers are going to develop massive weapons and then they're going to destroy us. It's like we have, and this is Ron Paul's argument, we have an incredible military. If we bring them all home and develop our defenses only, nobody could touch us. And, you know, especially if we have an armed citizenry like Switzerland, nobody could touch us. Nobody could take us over. Anybody who threatened us, you know, the people get mad, declare war, you do the war properly, and you execute it with the people on your side, you're going to win. You're going to win really fast. And we've done it historically. Now, people think, you know, the one objection was, look at Hitler. What would have happened in World War II if we hadn't gone in the war? Well, first of all, our method of getting into the war was due to a trick, deceit in World War II, where FDR cracked the code and didn't tell our Navy about the Japanese attack and let us get attacked so we'd get in the war. Now, it's hard to say that this is right, but I think as Hitler took over Poland and France and so on in Europe, we would have come into the war. We would have been later. It might have been closer. It might have been tougher. But America was building up so fast. We have a free people are so strong compared in history. And if you're religious and you believe, you know, you do things right where you're not stealing from each other, you're not breaking God's law, God's going to protect you. He's going to protect you. I believe you can trust God with history. The good guys who are, you know, I've never seen a nation that, well, there's never been a nation like the U.S. was in its initial founding. But there's, you know, nations that are young and believe in the truth and exercise as such, and their government hasn't come over and swallowed everything, are so powerful nobody can touch them. And nobody wants to touch a happy people. It doesn't make sense. So I don't think it's foreign policy is a big problem. I think it's definitely in the right direction. This fear of, gosh, we got to control the world or we're going to be dead is because we're crippled with socialism. We are a weak nation because our people are weak. It's not your military that saves a country. It's the truth and the people and a righteous leadership. The second objection is religion. And it's like either he's too fanatical, he's too religious, or he's not religious enough. It's so funny how people will, you know, when they find a guy who starts to speak the right thing, they got to pick him apart. And he's got to be perfect or they won't vote for him. But people will vote for a total stooge like Obama and trust him, you know, because he just says what they want to hear. And it's sad. Ron Paul says tries to speak the truth. He doesn't try to speak necessarily just what you want to hear. There's some of that, but I think he has to pull his punches to keep a lot of people who are on the border from getting scared because they don't understand the truth. You know, the old you can't handle the truth. But anyway, the religious problem, like some say, you know, he's not against gays. Well, it's not that he's not against gays. It's that he realizes that marriage is not proper jurisdiction for the federal government. So the government shouldn't care about marriage. Marriage is something that individuals do. And when people, you know, people also need the right to be able to reject other people and discriminate. That's been the biggest sin. Oh, you can't discriminate. Yes, you can. If you're a free person, you can control your own property. It's your business. You don't want gays in your business or whoever. You should be able to say, I don't want them. Go away. And you can fire or hire people or associate with people that you choose. And that is the social check valve. That's the social control valve that is used to stop people that are doing, you know, things that people don't want them to do and that are offensive. This is how you control offensive. You get rid of discrimination, no one can stop an offensive person. And now the courts have to get in there and stop an offensive person when a person should be able to have the right to say, you know, what you're doing is offending me, go away. And it's my property. And it doesn't matter what the reason is that needs to be done. But I can't undo all the propaganda about discrimination because you're going to say I'm a racist and I hate blacks and things like that are not true. It's not the purpose. The purpose is that I love freedom and I love private property and I love people having to be able to express their own will over their own property. And that includes discrimination. So that's the gay marriage issue. Other religious things are, you know, that he doesn't want to support Israel. It's the foreign policy thing. Oh, gosh, he doesn't support Israel. We're going to die. It's true that the Bible says those who help Israel are friends of Israel, God's going to be friends with them, and if they're enemies of Israel, God's going to be enemies with them. But if the U.S. takes a neutral stance, the government gets out of the way and the people associate, our people can come over there and bring all the stuff they want to Israel. And they don't need to be robbed by taxes, and then everything's centrally controlled, and then a central government helping a nation. It doesn't work that way well. The right people don't get the aid. You typically hear about it just like, Haiti recently with the earthquake, and people are still dying there of cholera. No, nothing's fixed. And it's because the government got involved and bigwig agencies got involved, and people are still not just going over there. They're not allowed to go over there and just give like they want to. The government's in the way. And so typically that always happens. So foreign aid to Israel should be done on a personal one-by-one basis. If you want to give your money to Israel, you should be able to do that. And the government should get out of the way. So that's the two main religious objections I've heard to Ron Paul. I don't think the guy's perfect. There's things I have problems with him. I think he's probably pulling his punches on certain issues like 9/11. I don't agree with him. But that's because if he said what he really believed, nobody would vote for him. And it's not that he's necessarily wrong, but people aren't ready for that level of truth. He's concentrating on a very simple message, which is shrink government, get the Fed out of the way, stop this phony money system that's destroying us with debt, and I'll let him talk for himself. I recorded it. Like I say, it was done progressively as I entered the area, standing in a long line. The place was packed, a lot of young people, a lot of students. I interviewed several students, but the recording didn't work right, so I didn't get him on here, but most everybody I talked to was just curious. I want to hear Ron Paul. I want to hear him say what he wants to say and not have the filter in the way of the media. People are sick and tired of the media not allowing Ron Paul to speak. It happens at the debates. It happens in the news coverage. He's just counted as an unimportant candidate when he's in fact the leader. And both parties are doing, or the Republican Party especially, is doing everything they can to stop him from getting the nomination. A lot of chicanery, a lot of messing with votes and fraud and all kinds of things. In fact, I heard the Washington caucuses were delayed because there's so much support for Ron Paul that the party just couldn't let it happen. They had to screw with it because they can't let him be the nominee of the state. It's too embarrassing. But it shouldn't be. Ron Paul is a true conservative Christian man that I think is far, far more qualified than anyone running. There's no one near Ron Paul, no one to touch him. And you might have a few objections. I have a few objections. Hey, he's going to be a good president. He's going to turn this thing around. And, of course, people say they want change, but they really don't want change. We're so propagandized by the schools and by the media, we're not thinking. But Ron Paul is a safe president, and I hope he wins. So without further ado, here is the recording I made of the event. Catch you later.
They participated in it. They had the runaway inflation of the continental dollar, and they said, boy, this is a mess. Let's not allow this to happen again. So what did they put in the Constitution? Guess what? Only gold and silver can be legal tender. That is still the law of the land.
Yeah!
And also, there's a prohibition in the Constitution that you can't commit bills or credit, which is paper money. And also, it gives no authority to have a central bank. So the law of the land contradicts everything that we have been doing. And this is very significant, because if you look at history a little bit, you will notice that the downside on our protection of our liberties, our Constitution, our economy, and our foreign policy occurred approximately 100 years ago. Certainly 1913 wasn't a very good year for us, I don't know. Because that was the introduction of the notion to set the stage for endless growth of government and consumption of wealth. And that was the giving to the people the income tax as well as the Federal Reserve, both being repealed. But the prohibitions in the Constitution have been ignored, certainly in foreign policy. There is a strict provision there for having strong national defense. It was not left up to the states for a national defense. So that is a responsibility, and a lot of burden is placed on the president as being the commander-in-chief. But that doesn't mean that we should have a foreign policy of endless wars, undeclared, unwinnable. Constitutional president, I promise that I would never go to war without proper permission by the Congress from the people. And if there's necessity to declare a war, you declare the war, you fight the war, you win it, and you get over it, and you come on home. Since World War II, we have gone astray. We haven't fought a war with a declaration. Not only that, we allow our presidents to take us to war. We allow our presidents to casually go to war. Sometimes they inform the Congress. Sometimes they mention it to the people. But they get their authority from the United Nations. No, we shouldn't ever do that. That is undermining our national sovereignty, and this is one of the problems that we've had. Even today, you know, going into Libya was under NATO, the United Nations, and we're in Afghanistan under NATO, and it's endless. If we would just follow that one provision, don't go to war unless there's a declaration, just think of the difference of those past 10 years. All those wars wouldn't have been fought. The 8,500 Americans that we have lost, the 44,000 of severe injuries, the hundreds of thousands now begging and pleading for help with post-traumatic stress syndrome, and looking for help. And also, our national debt would be $4 trillion smaller. That is the kind of debt we have run up over these last 12 years. And for what purpose? This nation building and policing on the world, getting involved in these internal affairs and these civil wars, it isn't to our benefit. It undermines our defense and bankrupts our country. Not too infrequently when I speak, people will take it seriously and they'll say, okay, you know, I think I sort of agree with you about bringing troops home. And how fast can you bring the troops home? I say, as quickly as I can get the ships over to where they are and I just bring them home. But then they say, we have to be disruptive. How could it be more disruptive than sending young men and women over for the 5th and the 6th tour of duty? And now it's being revealed more of the military people are willing to speak out and tell us about the futility of what's going on. And one thing that reassures me, not only have I served in the military and during the 60s when times weren't exactly very pleasant, but now, when you look at what the active military and the retiring military people do in their picking of their candidate, our organization, you know, our candidacy, and our campaign gets more donations from the military, active and inactive, than all the other candidates put together, including the president. So the foreign policy obviously has to be changed. We don't have to think one minute that we would be less safe. We would be more safe. We now make the assumption that we can bomb any country, any place in the world. Our drones are more powerful. We have more weapons than everybody else put together. We spend more money than everybody else put together. And believe me, with my knowledge of the military and politics and understanding, one thing that we have is we have a very, very powerful, efficient military, and we don't have to be worried about being attacked. Let me tell you, they are not going to attack us and invade this country. But that doesn't give us license to push ourselves around the world. And this is our problem. We have done too much of that, and we have built up too many enemies because of it. The founders were very much aware of this. They talked about the relationship, and they wanted friendly relationship and trade with any country that will offer that. They didn't believe in trying to punish people by sanctions, and they certainly did put in the Constitution that if you can find a friendly dictator, you can give them a lot of money to bribe them. That, unfortunately, has been our foreign policy. We go around looking for our dictators, and if they do our bidding, we give them billions of dollars. If they don't do it, we bomb them. And I thought, well, there has to be another option, you know, friendship and trade and at least negotiations with people, which would be quite different. But I failed to realize there was actually a fourth option, which we're participating in with Pakistan. Not only do we bomb that country, we give them a lot of money at the same time. So it's time to become more aware of this. And one thing is, I've been talking about this for a long time. I recall the first speech I gave against foreign war against Iraq was in 1998. So we need to, you know, push these programs because there's no reason why we should continue to do what we're doing because it is literally bankrupting our country. And it is up to us. If the people speak up, believe me, government will change. And the government does actually reflect the people. And for too long, we've been too complacent. And we were too complacent for too many years, decades, if not for the last 7 or 8 years. We were complacent because we've been a very, very wealthy nation. We were concerned about the wealth. We were concerned about material things. It encouraged the lobbyists to go to Washington and get this wealth redistributed to the special interest. And still, we watched it. But today, things are completely different because we're much poorer, and it's a failed system. The entitlement system doesn't work. Morally, it's wrong. Entitlements are not rights. You're not entitled to your neighbor's property, even if you send the IRS after the property to get it for you. anyone voted for the entitlement system over the many decades with good intentions, and I understand that, because there are a few who know exactly what they're doing, and they knew what the consequence would be. But a lot of people say, well, there are going to be people who are falling through the cracks, and the only thing that we can do to help people is have a government program, not realizing that eventually the government program backfires and hurts the very people you're trying to help. A perfect example of this is what happened with the housing program. The people who felt good, they're entitled to it, they deserve a house, every house, let the government do whatever they can. And also, it was this magnificent thing about inflation. Get them to hold a house, the house will go up in value, a $100,000 house will be $200,000, and the people can borrow against this money, and it'll be a perpetual wealth machine. Not realizing that Austrian free market economics fully explained it, so that's what you call a bubble that's created by the Federal Reserve loose monetary policy, and that's where the trouble comes from. But because so many were convinced that the entitlement system was right and that they grabbed the moral high ground, and those of us who disagreed that we didn't care about our fellow man and we had no humanitarian instincts. But the true humanitarian has to understand if you care about your neighbor, if you care about prosperity, if you care about the middle class, and if you want to maximize wealth and fairly distribute it better than any other system, you have to believe in freedom. You have to believe in sound money, and you have to believe in the free market. Otherwise, it's a failed policy. It's a shame that we haven't been able to convince people in the past that a system of freedom is a humanitarian system. Instead, we lost that argument, but guess what? We're starting to win it now, because the failure is all around us, whether it's the failure of the housing program or the failure of the foreign policy with these endless wars, the failure of the government to protect our civil liberties in the name of freedom. They come and attack us and invade our homes without search warrants. Let me tell you, the defenders of the revolution and the writers of the Constitution would be embarrassed if they knew what we were putting up with our own government. But once again, they play on fears and innuendos and try to scare the people. After 9/11, of course, we had to go after the bad guys. And I voted to go after the bad guys, go after the al-Qaeda that was responsible. But look, it took over 10 years to get hold of bin Laden. At the same time, they took 10 years to invade countries they were just itching to invade in and occupy. They used it as an excuse. But what about what the Congress and the President did to the American people? The American people weren't guilty, but what has happened? They went and immediately passed the Patriot Act, which undermines your liberties. The Patriot Act is one thing for certain. It is not patriotic. So the best thing we can do with the Patriot Act is repeal it as quickly as possible. I was convinced that if they had a different name on the Patriot Act, if they had to repeal the Fourth Amendment Act, nobody would have voted for it. So instead of saying we're going to repeal the Patriot Act, how about restore the Fourth Amendment to the American people? But there's been a lot of other attacks on our civil liberties systematically. In a time of war and economic crisis, it seems like in the past that people were too willing to give up their liberties, even though our founders warned us. And they said, if you're willing to give up your liberties for safety and security, you're going to end up losing both. And I am convinced, the more I think about it, I'm absolutely convinced, if it is safety and security that you want, you never have to give up any of your rights at all, any of your privileges, never. But actually, under the conditions that we have today, the economic crisis that came, they blamed, of course, there was too much freedom and too much free markets, and the Depression was blamed on the gold standard and free markets, so therefore they had to get rid of those very things. And it's only now, the first time in 100 years, that we got the real culprit out in front, who creates the business cycle, creates the bailouts for the privileged class, and that is the Federal Reserve System. But the entitlement system has been with us too long, and this idea that entitlement is a right is absolutely wrong. They are no rights. You do not have these rights to take from other people. But this is the reason that we have to understand what personal liberty is all about. And we have to know where liberty comes from. It doesn't come from our government. Our government can't give us our liberty. Government can't give us our right to our life. They're supposed to protect our liberties and protect our property, but they have done the opposite. We have to understand that our lives and our liberties come from our Creator, not from our government.
Yeah!
And in a limited constitutional republic, the purpose of the government is to protect those liberties, to protect your right to own property, not to control the property and tell you when you can use it and can't use it and how you can use it, and then you have to pay the taxes on it, you know. And anything goes wrong, they're going to blame you or use this excuse for extreme environmental positions that some people take. I think we have lost the concept of private property, but it really was initiated with this whole concept of the income tax. The income tax, even if you pay a small amount, is very, very dangerous, because the income tax is based on the assumption that everything you earn belongs to the government. But then the government will write a law and permit you to keep a certain portion as long as you follow the rules and what the conditions are. So we've conceded the whole argument that it belongs to the government, and therefore they control our property, they control our lives, and undermines the productive segment of the economy. And this is why I'm so sad that we weren't able to defend this position, because there's no reason in the world why we should ever give up on the defense of this if we care about people. If you want to help people, you want prosperity, you want jobs. But look at the results. Today, I think the evidence is so clear, more than ever in our history. Before, we'd have these mild downturns, but we would never have the horrendous debt. And this is a worldwide problem brought on through the monetary system. So we have the opportunity now to defend what we believe in, that if government fails, has government done a good job overseas? No. The government is bankrupting us. And that's exactly what Al-Qaeda wanted. They wrote about it. They say, we want to do this. We want to antagonize the Americans. They're going to come over and they're going to get bogged down in various countries. We know what we'll do. They thought we might go into one country or two. They never dreamed we'd be in six and seven and looking and getting anxious for the next few to go into. Right now, we have an administration and the majority in Washington, D.C. They can't wait till they can get involved in Syria. Then they're going to march into Iran. We don't need that attitude. But what we need to do is know why it's important for us to understand these principles, because it's vitally important now. But today, the failure is all around us, whether it's the housing programs, the economy, the failure of the monetary system, and that is why we have this opportunity to present the case. Now, do we have to start from scratch? No. Other countries might have to when they get this way. But we had the greatest experiment in freedom than any other country. And therefore, we were the wealthiest country ever. We had the largest middle class ever. And because we have rejected those convictions, where are we today? Our middle class is shrinking. The jobs are going away. Our students are graduating with horrendous debts and no jobs available to them. So this is a... This is obviously a time that we have to challenge the status quo, and this is what the problem is with what we're being offered today. The other candidates offer just tinkering around the edges with the status quo. They don't challenge foreign policy. They don't challenge monetary policy. They don't challenge the attack on our civil liberties, and they don't challenge the attack on the spending. Nobody else is talking about cutting spending. And for a starter, I want to cut $1 trillion out of the budget in the first year. Now, yeah, some people will get out to the smaller audience and we'll get to discuss a few things. And I say, how's that going to help? The government's spending this money. Isn't this all an economic stimulus? I said, no, it's an economic negative. The government, where do they get the money? They either inflate, which is destructive to all of us, or they tax us and they take it out. So we lose there. But then when they spend it, they say they invest it. Governments can't invest. They have no idea what investments mean. They spend it and give it to their cronies, and they bail out the rich folks on Wall Street and in the military-industrial complex, and they pass out this money. So it doesn't solve the problem at all. And this is why we have to say this is an opportunity for us to show what kind of conditions we have, where we have gone wrong, and what we need to do. But it wouldn't be all that complicated if we just had more people in Washington who at least read the Constitution. That would be helpful. Systematically, our civil liberties have been under attack. They've been under attack now and then over a period of time, certainly during wartime. People let their guard down thinking, oh, it's unnecessary. And, of course, I don't believe it ever is necessary, and certainly not because we're in war that we should give up our liberties. But, you know, on New Year's Day, the president gave us a wonderful New Year's present. He signed the National Defense Authorization Act. So now the Congress did this, wrote the bill for him, and said that he can use the military to arrest American citizens if they're a suspect, with no charges, no trial, no attorney, secret prison, and held indefinitely. And that's put into the law. So one thing, in addition to what
we have somebody
seen
coming
in
the
Republic with the information of the Federal Reserve, you would see the repeal not only of the Patriot Act, you would make sure a president can never arrest somebody with the military on suspicion. Now, without permission of the Congress, the president announced a year ago that the president, he claims it's not prohibited in the Constitution, so therefore he's allowed to do it. So he says that a president has the authority to assassinate an American citizen. Just out of the clear blue. Oh, only the bad guys. And I thought the trials were for the bad guys as much as the other guys to sort it all out. So... I mean, we gave trials to the Nazi war criminals. We gave trial to Timothy McVeigh. We've given trials to the really terrible people. But that is what it's supposed to be. But to just say that they're a suspect, and the laws now say that a suspect is somebody that just might be associated with an organization. Just an association. Maybe that's visiting a website. Maybe it's getting emails. Maybe it's attending a meeting. Who knows what it means? It's very, very vague. So this is why I am sure our founders would be very, very disappointed with what we're doing. But the good part is a lot of people are waking up to this, and they're becoming aware of exactly what's happening in Washington, and they want to see it change. Yeah. A couple of months ago, when I started talking about the National Defense Authorization Act, all I needed to say is exactly what I did a few minutes ago, say the name of the bill, and there were boos and hisses because the people knew exactly what I was talking about. But I know you didn't hear it on national TV, and you didn't hear it from the politicians, and you don't read it in the newspaper, but fortunately, we do have an internet. And that is the way information of great value is now being spread. But once again, I think those who are threatened by what we're trying to do know that the internet is a danger to them. It's a blessing to us. So this is the reason they had to stop online piracy act. To take over the internet. But this should give us encouragement because a lot of people heard about it. A few of us spoke out, and guess what? They heard your voices, and they withdrew those bills both from the House and the Senate. So this means that we still have enough freedom in this country to have an effect on the government, and this is our goal. For many, you know, a lot of people, we call things the Patriot Act and other things, and who are the patriots and who aren't. And we too often have heard, especially in Washington, we're not taking a position against going to war without a declaration, which sounds to me like a patriotic idea. But they would accuse me of being un-American, unpatriotic. But there is nothing unpatriotic about challenging your government when your government is wrong. That, unfortunately, makes it very easy for us to be patriotic because so many opportunities to challenge our government. Because we can do it from, you know, property rights on down and monetary policy and war policy, the whole works, and civil liberties. But we are at a point where we have to make a decision. If we continue to do what we're doing and not cut back on spending, they say, well, we can't let anybody fall through the cracks and nobody's proposing these cuts. If we can continue to do this, we destroy everything because we'll have runaway inflation. You cannot spend money endlessly. You can't have a debt of $1.3 or $1.6 trillion every year and monetize that debt and print the money. They're still taking our money, and that's why it's holding together. But one of these days, there's going to be an event in the world, someplace, and already there's starting to be hints that they're serious about going into Iran. Oil is now $103, and they're expecting $4 of gasoline. As a matter of fact, I think up in this area of the country, the gasoline prices are pretty high. But it can get a lot worse on that, and it can move rapidly. And this will hurt everybody, no matter how badly you want to take care of poor people by sending them more money. What if the money doesn't work? What if it doesn't buy anything? So it'll be at a point of no return. And that's why I continue to do what we're doing. It's the worst thing that we can do. The most important thing is to admit the truth. Instead of putting our heads in the sand and saying, oh, there's no problems, we can work our way out of it. You know, the central bankers know what they're doing, and you know, Congress will finally get their act together. Well, that's a dream, isn't it? So, but this is important for us to figure out what we're going to do. And to me, it is not difficult. It would take a year or so to get back on our feet, but not much longer. Right now, we're into our fourth year of this super recession. If you talk to the people who are unemployed, actually, if you go back to the old method of calculating unemployment, it's 22%. And the government is saying, well, maybe it's a little higher, but at least we don't have inflation. Yeah, we don't have inflation. Inflation, ask the people who are on fixed incomes who are receiving Social Security, they know darn well that they're not keeping up and their standard of living is going down. So just because they say there's no price inflation, believe me, they can't convince the American people that they can get away with it for a while, and they can even fool the markets for a while. But now is the time that we have to make a decision. And the decision has to be, is it going to be more government or is it going to be more freedom? I know where I'm going. I've often said, because I firmly believe that if I could have my freedom but less prosperity, I would take my freedom. But the wonderful thing is we don't have to make a choice. The more freedom we have, the more prosperity there will be. But there's more self-reliance. There has to be assumption that we're responsible for our lives. And that's what freedom is all about. Understanding that freedom comes to us, as I said, in a natural way. We get our lives and our liberties from an outside source, a natural way or a God-given way. And therefore, your life is your own. Your life is yours to make and make it worthwhile, or your life is yours to waste. It is up to you. If you deliver that responsibility to the government to take care of us from cradle to grave, they can't do it, but in their effort to do it, they destroy our liberties. And this is what has happened for too long, and of course, the benefits go to the wealthy rather than the poor that it was intended. But the magnificent thing about our country, at least at the beginning, but we have lost, is freedom was seen as a whole unit. Freedom was seen as an individual thing. Civil liberties, a right to our religious, a right to read books, the right to put into our bodies what we want. They weren't separate things. You know, they were all one thing. And then economic liberty was the same thing. But today we have some people, a token effort to defend economic liberty and freedom in the marketplace. But the other, there will be another group will say, well, we have to watch civil liberties, but we don't like the way you're spending your money. We're going to take your money and spend it for you. There is nothing wrong with putting this back together as the founders understood it. Freedom is yours. Freedom is your life. Freedom is the right to your liberty, and it ought to be the right to keep the fruits of all your labors. And this would solve so many problems. And it's a system. Some people don't like the idea, and they say, well, some people might misuse their freedoms, and they'll do things I just don't approve of. Well, so what? But some people might get their money, and they might not spend it like I do, because I'm pretty much of a miser. You know, I try to protect my money, and I'm not a gambler. But if somebody wants to gamble, that's okay. But they shouldn't come to me and expect me to bail them out when they gamble their money away. In the same way with a perfect personal lifestyle, if it's not good for you and hurts you, you have to assume that responsibility. But the other magnificent thing about this understanding about what liberty is all about, you don't have to ask people what they're going to do with their liberty. But when it goes to the government, then you have to ask and you have to fight over to get some of your money back, and then they have all the rules and regulations or what you, kind of hoops you have to jump through to get your money back from it, whether it comes to the state or you as an individual. But if you can bring people together and allow them to use their liberty any way they want, except don't hurt anybody, don't take their property, be honest with people, but use your life and your money and your liberty as you so choose, then all of a sudden you see people coming together, not because they agree with their religion or not because they agree with the books that you're going to read or what you want to study or not because of your lifestyle, but you come together because we all agree that we want to be free people. We want to be ourselves. Yeah. And the one thing to remember is the fact that if you legalize freedom of choice in everything possible except that which uses violence, it doesn't mean you endorse anything that they do. I mean, if somebody wants to take their religious liberties and practice a religion, you figure, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. But that's up to them as long as they're not pushing it on us. This is why, of course, theocracies are so bad, and our efforts to tell other people around the world, if we don't want our next-door neighbor telling us what to do on Sundays and Mondays and Tuesdays, why in the world should we accept the notion that the people around the world are going to accept us to tell them how to run their countries? Of course, when we go over there, as always with good intentions, we go over to make the world safe for democracy. We're going to spread democracy. If you don't do it, we're going to bomb you. But we go over there, and we finally get control of the country, and we come up with these elections, and they have an election. And lo and behold, they finally get an election, but they elect the wrong people, so we won't even accept them as their leaders. I mean, they have to elect the ones we tell them to elect. It's such a farce and such a pretense that it's this acceptance of people that should, whether it's international or domestically or economically, bring people together on this whole idea and tolerate people without saying that you endorse what they do. There is no reason why this shouldn't be able, in our society, in this country especially, this should bring people together and has over the years. But one other danger has been too often in our early history, we took away rights for people belonging to certain groups. The rights don't belong to anybody because they belong to a group. They should never be taken away from anybody belong because they belong to a certain group. But also, privileges should be passed out and rights cannot be passed out to certain groups. You don't have rights because you belong to a group. You have rights because you're an individual and your rights came to you in a natural way and not because government gave them to you or because you belong to a certain group. I am fully convinced that if we would restore this message and understanding, not go backwards at all, because freedom is a young idea. It's not thousands of years old. Tyranny is thousands of years old. Even inflation is thousands of years old. So it's just been in recent memory, not memory, but last 100 or 200 years, especially in our life, in the lifetime of our country, that this has been tested. And it worked rather well, and we gave up on it. So right now, that is what we have to do. Not only should we restore those principles, we don't have to go back and be firmly fixed in an age of 100, 200 years ago. We can have a better monetary policy. We can have a better understanding of what the concept of liberty is. We can have a better understanding of property rights. We can have a better understanding how the world works better with very limited governments and less bombs. So this is a system. You know, it was said early in our history by Samuel Adams that it doesn't take a majority, and it really doesn't. The majority of the people usually go along with leaders, and a group like this is usually in the minority. We remain in the minority. Most people vote at the last minute, and they check around. So the minority, Adam said, is that in order to bring about change, you have to have a tireless, irate minority, and it's not necessary to have the majority. But that minority has to be doing something. They have, and with the way he described it, you have to be starting brush fires of liberty in the minds of men. And that I can report to you is what's happening in this country today. There are a lot of brush fires every single day. Every day in the last few days, I come and I find that there are already brush fires starting in these many, many communities around the country. People are looking toward this whole concept of liberty. So this is definitely moving in the right direction. We have people who have been sitting on the bylines for decades now. They sort of gave up. They didn't feel like they were being represented. They're coming out of the woodworks, and they do understand what real liberty is all about, because it's coming alive again. But the most encouragement should come from the younger generation who are waking up, and they love the ideas of liberty. So in spite of our problems, we can be optimistic. We have a better chance now than ever before. So I welcome you. I hope you will stay engaged and stay involved. There's an election coming up. Please participate and do your job now that you are part of the understanding of what has to be done. I tell people, if you know and understand this, you're one of the few. You're in the minority, but you play an important role. So if you do understand exactly what I'm talking about, you will feel obligated. You'll feel uncomfortable if you don't go out and do your job. And I thank you very much for coming out today.